It's Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
We'll be in and out. Anyway, you've never seen my lab.
Oh, great. I get to see your nerd lab.
Hello, Las Vegas. I didn't think of anything clever to say.
That's all right. I don't have the mic where I want it at all, so.
The Golden Knights play tonight.
Yeah, they do.
They can win their fourth in a row. They haven't done that yet this year. We are going to have Rodney Haddix, who is the head coach of Findlay Prep, on the show today. We're also going to talk some UNLV basketball as Jared adjusts all of the mics in the room at the same time. Good job. Got your mic ready to go?
I do now.
Good job. There's a buzzing when you turn that mic on.
That's because there's a spring attached to it.
All right. Want to know something fun about UNLV basketball?
No.
They're really good at something.
Is it rebounding?
It's rebounding, particularly on the offensive side. You want to know how good they are?
No.
They're the second best rebounding team in the country, offensive rebounding team in the country. So it's not often that UNLV is top five in the country in something. We're only five games in, I know. But it's really good. I do a lot of complaining about Marvin Menzies using big lineups, Marvin Menzies ignoring three-pointers. But the plus side to Marvin Menzies using big lineups is that the team is usually excellent rebounding, particularly offensive rebounding. The numbers for you, UNLV is getting 44% of their own misses.
That seems good.
To give you the math there, the average for a college basketball team is to get 29% of its own misses. So in college basketball, when a shot goes up, the defense gets the rebound 71% of the time. UNLV's opponents are only getting 56% of those.
That's huge.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous number.
Small sample size, but...
See, even on that small sample size, so like 44% is a big number, and it probably won't stay there. But like, this is something that Marvin Menzies' teams have pretty much always done well. So this is his 12th year coaching, being the head coach. Previous 11 years, 7 of the 11, they've been top 50 in offensive rebounding rate. Last year, the team was 20th. When he was at New Mexico State, he had two teams in the top five. So he's had a couple of teams finish at 40% offensive rebounding rate. So there's a chance they could stay above 40% for the whole year, which would be, again, a ridiculous number. But it's something that Marvin Menzies' teams do really well. And it comes from him playing big lineups. That's the main facet here, but it's something they do really well. The funny part of it is, like the three-point shooting, how UNLV doesn't shoot three-point shooting while everybody else is. College basketball teams in general are crashing the offensive glass less and less. Like, offensive rebounding numbers are going down every single season. Meanwhile, Marvin Menzies is out here, all right, let's go get all the offensive rebounds we can. The good thing is unlike the three-point shooting, going for offensive rebounds doesn't necessarily hurt your efficiency or anything like that. Ignoring the three-pointer hurts your offensive efficiency. Going for offensive rebounds doesn't really hurt you that much. The reason teams are going away from it, though, is because there's this realization that if you go for offensive rebounds and don't get them, you're going to give up more transition baskets. So if you're a team that sucks at offensive rebounding, like a team that plays four guards or whatever, you should never try to get an offensive rebound. You should just get back on defense. If you didn't make your first shot, get back on defense, because you'll give up the transition baskets and your 6'2 guards are never going to get the offensive rebound. But when you're UNLV and you're playing basically three post players most of the time, you should go get them, because your offenses are very efficient when they get an offensive rebound. You score at a very high rate when you get an offensive rebound, because you're usually right by the damn basket and you get fouled a lot, so you get free throws. So if you're good at it, you should go after offensive rebounds. If you're playing four and five guards, no, just get back on defense, because you're wasting your time. So Marvin Menzies' teams play big. They play basically power forwards at the small forward spot, and because of that, they're good offensive rebound teams. You look at their numbers this year, and again, it's only five games, I know, but Mbaki Jong, Shakur Justin, Shekhnut Mbele, Jonathan Chama-Chachua, Turvo Beck, and Joel Ntambwe. All of those guys have good offensive rebounding numbers. Like, that's six guys right there that have impressive offensive rebounding numbers so far through the year. So at any given time, UNLV has three plus offensive rebounders on the floor, which means they should go attack the glass.
What, I mean, this is again me playing my little hypothetical game. If you are crashing the glass, why wouldn't you be setting up the guard on the perimeter and, like, incorporating getting an offensive rebound to an outlet pass to a wide-open three?
Well, you'd rather have the layup most of the time.
Most of the time? All right.
Like, if you... I mean, depends on the scenario. But when you get an offensive rebound, you usually get it right at the basket. You'd rather just go right back up and shoot it right there. Especially if it's Mbaki Jong or Shakur. Yeah. Like, if it's that's tall. That guy should go shoot again.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but no, I mean, you're not necessarily wrong in the sense that if you get an offensive rebound, hey, you should shoot a three-pointer, because typically those are open three-pointers. But if you get an offensive rebound and you're right by the basket, you should just go up with it. If you get some loose ball offensive rebound that's, you know, 10 feet from the basket, sure, you should look for the three. But in general, you get them by the rim, you shoot it. That's why they're an efficient part of the game. So as long as they continue to play big, this will be something that UNLV is good at and something they should continue to do, because it helps make up. Like, the team can't shoot very well, right? And they don't shoot a lot of threes. And it helps make up for that sort of lack of efficiency from the three-point line when you can get a bunch of offensive rebounds.
Every time you talk about how bad they are at shooting, I just go, we're never going to have Coach Menzies on again.
What do you mean? I'm complimenting him, saying it's good.
You're saying excellent offensive rebounding.
Disagreement in philosophy.
They can't shoot.
No, they can't, because they're playing power forwards at small forward. There was something I didn't get to yesterday, an interesting note looking at the rotations, and this kind of ties into the offensive rebounding, but you look at that center spot. When they played Southern Utah on Friday, it was the first time that Mbaki Jong got into any sort of foul trouble. And in the first half, Marvin Menzies tried Jonathan Chamachachua at center instead of Shekna Dembele. Like, this entire season, the center rotation has been Mbaki Jong, and then Shekna Dembele is his backup. In that first half, Dembele's on the bench, Jong's on the bench, so it means Jonathan Chamachachua is playing the backup center spot. And end of the first half, he messed up an offensive play where he didn't know where to go, and then on the defensive end, he committed a foul on a rebound with 0.1 seconds left. The rebound was irrelevant because there was nothing that was going to be able to happen because there was 0.1 seconds left, but he committed a foul going for a rebound. So that experiment may be over entirely. But what we saw in the second half, when Jong was on the bench, was Shakur Justin sliding from power forward down to center and playing a smaller lineup, and Tervell Beck was playing power forward. And I love that. Like, I love the idea of that smaller lineup when Jong's on the bench. And what I'm curious is eventually, Menzies has been playing this 10-man rotation, and eventually that's going to get cut down. Eventually they're going to only play 8 guys. Maybe it's only 7, but eventually it's going to get cut down to 8 guys or something like that. And maybe this is the first, like, little evidence we have to see of who might get cut of lineup, and it might be Shekna Dembele. That might be what it is. Now, Southern Utah doesn't really have a true center, so it's not really a great matchup for Shekna Dembele, but that might be what we see in the future, where Dembele, Jonathan Chamachachua are kind of phased out of the rotation, and when Mbaki Jong has to go to the bench, they play a little bit smaller with Beck and Justin at the power forward and center spot. Kind of counterintuitive to what I just said about the offensive rebounds and having a bunch of offensive rebounders on the floor, but maybe that's what we see. And maybe it's this week we see the rotation cut down, because they play Valpo on Wednesday. Not that Valpo is some super team, but they're pretty good. They could come in here and beat UNLV, and then they play Cincinnati on Saturday, where a game where UNLV won't be favored to win. So these might be two games that we see, you know, they're close, and Marvin Menzies decides, all right, these are my 7 guys, these are my 8 guys, this is what I'm going with. So we'll see. It's a big week for UNLV basketball.
I legitimately thought the Valpo game was today.
No, it's tomorrow. I hope it's tomorrow. Because I won't be at Thomas and Mack tonight. So yeah, Valpo, Cincinnati this week, and then they get a week off and they play Illinois, and then they get a week off and they play BYU. So they don't have very many games in this stretch, not like back-to-back or anything, but it's a big 4-game stretch for UNLV, and then they go to Hawaii for the Diamond Head Classic, where who knows who they'll play. Hawaii first, but maybe they'll get a decent team after that, because Hawaii's not any good. One other thing on this offensive rebounding front, I am always fascinated with fan reaction to things, and I swear to God, UNLV fans are just toxic. They want UNLV to be bad, because I posted that tweet about UNLV being the second best team in the country in offensive rebounds, right? It's like, hey, look at this thing that UNLV is really good at, right? They're one of the five best teams in the country at this thing. I'm going to point that out for you. And not the entire fan reaction, but multiple people responded with things like, you know, well, what about the turnovers? Or I don't care about national rankings. Or the schedule's too easy. You can't look at that right now. And I'm just like, why are there so many people that can't just be like, oh, we're cool. Good at this. That's great. Good job, Marvin Menzies. Like, I just don't understand why there's so much, like, I swear there are UNLV fans that want UNLV athletics to be terrible.
They've been terrible.
I mean, yeah, they have been. But, like, it's, I don't know. It's just like, we sit here and try to figure out, like, what's wrong with UNLV athletics? Rebels in ruins. Like, we try to figure this out. Like, why aren't people going to their games? Some of the fan base just wants them to be bad. Like, there's so many people that just, they do not want positive. Like, it's when UNLV beats Nevada for the cannon, and there's so many people that are like, oh, damn it, Tony Sanchez is back again. It's like they just don't want anything good to happen. Like, they just want it all to burn to the ground, and it just is weird to me.
I mean, I kind of understand it as the UNLV fan of, it feels like we've been in a holding pattern of mediocrity, or not even mediocrity, like badness. We are mediocre. Like, of the bad teams, we are the most middle-of-the-road bad team.
Yeah.
And it feels like you need to just burn the whole thing down, hit hard reset, and bring in something new. Instead of hiring more and more placeholders and getting like, oh, okay, we went to the CIB or whatever tournament.
They're too good for the CBI. Too good for it. Won't play in it.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. It's just always strange to me that there's so much, like, anger towards UNLV sports when something good happens. Like, can you just point out that something good happens? And there's just like, people are mad. People are upset that you say UNLV's good at something, and they can't just take it as, oh yeah, look at that, they're good at something. I don't know. It's just strange to me. So yeah, they play Valpo on Wednesday, not tonight.
Yep.
The
Mountain
West Missouri Valley Challenge.
I'm gonna have to make a phone call in the break and reschedule some things.
Totally correct. Brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Try out the BeConnected sports betting app. It is the easiest way to bet on sports in Vegas, and it is free to download.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. Visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
Max Pacioretty has 6 goals in the last 5 games.
Hey! He's good! He's on pace for 29.7 goals now, which is much more like the production George McPhee thought he was trading for, not the, 2 goals in the first 16 games of the season for Max Pacioretty. That's not very good for the guy you traded Tomas Tatar, Nick Suzuki, and a second-round pick for. I view Pacioretty kind of like how I view Fleury, where I think for the Golden Knights to have a good season, he has to be really good. Like, Fleury, I think, is the most important player. Like, if Fleury's a star, the Golden Knights are going to be fine. If Fleury's an average goalie, they might end up missing the playoffs. Pacioretty, I don't think, is quite as important, but he's one of the guys that you need to be good, and, like, especially when this team struggles at scoring, you're paying that guy to be the one that, I can score. It doesn't matter now. What's interesting on the statistical level from this is he's on a line with Cody Eakin and Alex Tuck, and they don't have very good numbers so far. Their Corsi's under 50%. They've given up 10 more scoring chances than they've had themselves. They've given up 7 more high-danger chances than they've had. And even in the last 3 games, where the Golden Knights have won all their games and – They haven't given up a goal in the last two. They're still under 50% Corsi and still giving up more scoring chances and high danger chances. Somehow, though, they've scored more goals than they've allowed when they've been on the ice. It's only 6-5, but the advanced stats suggest that that line is not going to continue to work in that way. It would suggest that they're going to start giving up more goals than they score. So I'm curious to see how that plays out, because if you're Gerard Gallant, you don't really have another option, because you don't have Erik Haula, you don't have Paul Stastny. So it kind of has to be those three guys, unless you, I don't know, call somebody up from the AHL and just stick them there or something. We'll see, but so far they've been fine as far as the goals go, but the underlying numbers suggest they're not going to be great going forward.
UNLV is ranked 47th in net. Should I say NET?
No, it's net. It's net.
Okay.
The NCAA got rid of RPI as an official metric for the selection committee, and they came up with net, which takes a lot of things into account: strength of schedule, location of the game, scoring margin, offensive and defensive efficiency.
When they did this, did they work backwards from the acronym?
I think so.
Okay. Because I remember it being RPI, and then they changed it to this, and I was like, that's fortuitous.
Yeah, net for basketball. So the initial ranking came out yesterday, and they have been crucified. Loyola Marymount is ranked number 10. But good loss for UNLV, by the way.
Yeah.
They lost to a top 10 team by only 11 points. So they've been just... Nate Silver, who runs 538, has just ripped this to shred. Like, he called it the worst rankings he's ever seen in any sport. In the Mountain West, Nevada's 13, Utah State's 37. UNLV's the third best Mountain West team according to these rankings right now. First off, though, the rankings mean nothing right now. Like, I treat KenPom like the Bible, basically, but even KenPom numbers right now, they're decent, but there are a lot of preseason projections worked into those still, and they will be until we get into conference play. And that's sort of the thing with college basketball: is you play 30 to 32 games in the regular season. More than half of your games are against conference opponents. You don't play a conference opponent until January. So you play 12, 13 non-conference games. That's not even half your schedule. And what's going to make up the majority of your resume is your conference opponents, and you haven't even played them yet. So I'm not ready to just take net and punt it off a cliff like most of the college basketball world is right now, because we'll see what they look like when we get into the middle of January and February, when teams start playing conference opponents and have half of their schedule. That'll give us a better idea, but I'm still venturing to guess KenPom is going to be better than whatever the hell net is.
So should KenPom officially take over as the selection?
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
Garion Conley allowed one catch and broke up two passes in 24 coverage snaps against the Ravens.
Can you imagine if KenPom.com was in charge of the NCAA tournament seeding? That would be amazing. Yeah, we're on rookie watch for the Raiders, even though Garion Conley's not officially a rookie. He only played two games last year, so screw it. He's still a rookie. That's a good performance, though.
Where'd you get this stat from?
Pro Football Focus.
Okay, because I was like... You told me to stop watching the All-22. Had you told me, I could have counted this stuff.
No. Pro Football Focus sends me an email after every Raiders game with, like, four bullet points, and they're, like, perfect for briefs. It's great. Another one was Brandon Parker, their rookie right tackle, allowed three sacks and six pressures in 39 pass-blocking snaps.
How many sacks?
Three.
Were they all against one guy who happened to sack Derek Carr once for a strip? And then two more times on consecutive plays, and then ran into a tunnel.
Yeah, possibly.
Good. He should keep his job.
Not good for Brandon Parker. I've talked about this before, but so they spent a third round pick on Brandon Parker. So that's not first round pick, you know, value that you're giving up there. But you take Colton Miller, first round pick, as your left tackle. Brandon Parker, third round pick, as your right tackle. If you could project out that those two guys were going to be good starting tackles for the next 5 or 6 years, then the Raiders will have done a terrific job. The problem becomes is if one or both of those guys are not any good and the Raiders realize that and decide, oh, one of our five first-round draft picks we need to spend on a tackle again, it'll feel like a loss of assets because you spent a first and a third round pick on your tackles, and if one or both of them is no good and you have to do that again in the draft, it'll just feel like, oh, they screwed that up big time.
Be like the Miami Dolphins. At one point, the Miami Dolphins, I think, had four first-round picks on their line, and
it wasn't any good.
Yeah, it was just dog-awful, so much so that the offensive line coach had to take up drug use, or white powdery substance use.
The last two UNLV-Nevada games have been the worst-attended games in the rivalry since 1985.
So this is from a Nevada Sportsnet 24/7 Reno Sports Channel. Are you confused about?
Well, but in fairness, wasn't the last one, not this one, most recent one, but the one before that, wasn't it during a weird time? Or am I thinking of something else up at Reno where it was basically empty?
Last year in Reno, it was the Saturday after Thanksgiving, just like this year.
Okay, well, then never mind.
Tony Sanchez mentioned the whole playing on Thanksgiving weekend, and he thinks it hurts attendance. This is the first time it's hurt UNLV. All of their other Thanksgiving weekend games against Nevada have been fine in attendance. They've been, 25,000 people, which is sort of what UNLV usually draws for this game. I think it's a matter of the teams being bad and not, like, when the game is played. Because, like, last year, Nevada was 2-9 going into that game.
Okay.
That's dreadful. UNLV was 3-8 coming into this game. Like, the teams have been crappy going in. And if we take it from the UNLV side, because I haven't paid that much attention to Nevada this year, but if we take it from the UNLV side, it's more of a season-long trend of bad attendance. Like, their average attendance this year was 16,800. That's terrible for UNLV football.
Better than I thought.
I mean, it's better than actual people in the building, true. But that's terrible for UNLV football. Like, they should be close to 20,000 as their average attendance. They're like 4,000 less than that. So,
man,
I just don't think it's the attendance thing. I don't think it's the rivalry game itself. I think it's more the teams aren't any good. And for UNLV specifically, the attendance has sucked this year. And it's honestly, it's the one fear of bringing Sanchez back is that attendance was bad this year. You bring him back next year, you're probably going to have the same quarterback next year. There's probably not going to be much reason to think the defense is any better. So it's like, it'll be very easy for fans to say, it's going to be the same. Why the hell would we go? And attendance could be worse again. They do get Hawaii coming to Sam Boyd, so that'll help the overall attendance because that'll be like 30,000 at that one. I think yeah. Boise State is supposed to come here, so that should help attendance. But like, Arkansas State comes here, Southern Utah comes here, San Jose State comes here, like, they're going to be like 12,000 for those games?
I love Hawaii games at Sam Boyd. They might as well call it a green out.
A green out. The pineapple is coming back to Vegas.
Nevada plays at Loyola Chicago tonight.
This game is tonight. The Mountain West Missouri Valley Challenge.
Okay.
Rematch of the Elite Eight from last year. It's on ESPN News, by the way. 5 o'clock. Same time as Golden Knights. Fun fact for you, Nevada is number one in KenPom's offensive efficiency rating right now. Last season they were 7, so they're still good at the whole offense thing.
I mean, my only thought is I was looking at different UNLV upcoming opponents, how many ranked teams they'll be playing, and
this is the only one.
This is the only ranked team.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, Cincinnati's decent, but they're not a top 25. They lost, like, everything from last year. So Cincinnati's not going to be top 25. BYU, Illinois aren't good enough to be top 25. And then Mountain West, San Diego State.
Are you saying Air Force isn't going to be bringing a squad?
Yeah, there's just not many good teams. But this is a Mountain West game that'll get national attention because it's a rematch of the Elite Eight. Even though Loyola Chicago's not that. They lost, like, everything, too. Nevada's going to beat them by, like, 40 is what's going to happen tonight because Loyola Chicago lost everything. And Musselman was like, yeah, I'm going to go get a 5-star. Just throw them in there. And then I'm only going to play them 5 minutes a game because the rest of my team's better than that.
Is that a Mountain West thing? Go get a 5-star and then
not play him?
Yeah, and then just be like, man, these 5-stars can't play defense.
It's a 3-star conference.
UNLV had the second least efficient special teams in college football in 2018. Woo!
Only Western Michigan was worse. And it's only because Hayes Hicken, UNLV's punter, was pretty good. Like, he had a re- he was in, I don't know what he finished, but he was in the top 10 at one point in terms of punting average. So they had a really good punter. The rest of their special teams was terrible. And that's the only reason they were better than Western Michigan, is because their punter was good. And Western Michigan's punter was apparently awful.
So we're in the top five.
Of?
The bottom.
Oh, yes, the bottom five. Yes, yes. So this is using
S&P Plus. We're number two. We're number two.
This is using S&P Plus as an efficiency metric. The concerning thing about the Sanchez era is special teams have gotten worse by this efficiency metric every single year. His first year, their special teams efficiency was 71st in the country, then 84th, then 101st, now 129. Usually, the mindset with special teams is, as you build depth, your special teams should get better because the depth guys are the ones that play on special teams. The depth is supposedly getting better, but the special teams is getting worse. And I don't know what to do with that. Like, they're just not good. Like,
that sounds like a scheme issue. Like, I'm not going
to
lie.
Well, they have been, like, they've had to have been the worst punt return team in college football since he's been here.
Oh, yeah.
Because
they had
a year
God.
Where they had negative punt return yards for the whole season. And then this year, they just fumbled the ball every time they tried to return
yeah,
a punt.
It was like...
Like, Mike Romala has his theory is, like, UNLV should just not have a punt return. Like, no punt returners. Just let the ball bounce, and wherever the hell it bounces, that's where you get the ball. Because you're not going to turn it over if there's nobody back there. And it's not wrong. Like, it's fine. Like, that's probably a logical way to do it.
And you may get a punt block if you line up that extra guy.
You might. Or you get the 15-yard foul for roughing the punter, and then you screwed yourself.
That sounds
just,
like...
Just don't put anybody on the field when the other team punts.
No, just 11 guys all holding hands
just
in a circle.
Just do the flag football thing where the other team says, all right, we're just going to 30 yards down the field. That's the punt. That's fine. We'll get more into some S&P Plus stuff, looking at the offense and the defense later in the week, because some interesting stuff. The defense was really, really bad this year. Coming up next, though, we've got Rodney Haddix, the head coach of the Findlay Prep Pilots, in studio.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
Yesterday we had Jake Bischoff on the show. Today we talked to the new coach of a 15th-place USL team. Are we hooking the brand of the show up to the wrong thing?
No.
These are the right things?
Yeah.
Okay. Are we sure?
I'm 100% positive that this is our lane.
This is our pathardom.
Well, I don't know about stardom, but this is our path.
All right.
This is, no one else is going to this well.
Okay.
Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
In studio with us, head coach at Findlay Prep, is Rodney Haddix. Glad you came in studio.
Appreciate you guys having me here.
Drove a long way over here to get in studio, too.
I know, man. We really like you guys.
So, all right, we're going to start because we're going to endear you to old-time UNLV fans here to start. You guys are 4-0, and the fewest points you've scored in a game is 111 this year?
Yes.
All right.
Correct.
So you're going to have UNLV fans wanting, like... you to go tell Marvin Menzies about all these points and just do it like Tark. Just score as many points as Tark did. That's all they want.
That's the plan.
Are you guys trying to play as fast as possible?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, we're in the entertainment capital of the world, so, you know, we got to put on a good show.
That's right. See, you're going to have people trying to call Marvin Menzies right now saying, hey, this guy, he's just trying to play fast, and that's all they care about. So, all right, before we get into anything with this year's team, you coached Bol Bol last season.
I did.
All right, give me something on Bol Bol. He's a 7-2 freshman at Oregon. He's averaging like 21, 10, and 3 right now.
Yeah.
Give me something on Bol Bol.
First off, he's a unicorn. You see all these kids talking about this unicorn stuff. He's a kid's amazing. I mean, we had a game he had, what, 30 and 25? Like, I've never seen anybody
wait,
do
wait,
that.
How did like high school kids or other prep school kids guard 7-foot-2 Bol Bol? Like,
you can't. You got to push him around or, like, you know, foul the crap out of him. But I mean, there's nothing you can do with him. He's a unicorn. Like, there's nothing you can do.
Did you guys let him shoot threes?
We let him do whatever he wants. Why would you not? I mean, look at what he's doing on the college stage. I mean,
it was
so easy for him.
Like, and it's just like terrifying. You watch Oregon play, and he pulls up from three, and you're like, no, that's not fair.
How do you guard that?
That guy can't shoot.
There's nobody in the world that can guard that.
If he's gonna make threes, that's not fair.
Yeah, no one can guard that.
Yeah, so he might be a top 10 pick, might be a top 5 pick this year.
He should be. He should be the number 1 pick.
Uh oh, taking on Duke.
He should be.
That's right.
I mean, come on, RJ Barrett plays really hard. Zion Williamson, he's a bowling ball, but I mean, Bol Bol, come on, man.
It's great.
7-3, can shoot, can handle it, can rebound it, can push it off the break, can pass it. Why would you not take him number one?
They did lose to Texas Southern last night.
They
did. He had like 32, though.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I mean, he went off. So he got his numbers.
So this year's team, you guys got P.J. Fuller going to TCU.
Yeah.
You got Raymond Hawk and Sheriff Kennedy have some solid Power 5 offers as well.
Yeah.
Who am I missing? Who's?
Blaise Beauchamp. Kid named Blaze, and he hit 9 threes the other day. He had 39 points in the game against Bella Vista, and, you know, only fitting his name's Blaze.
He's in the 2020 class? Is
yeah, he's
right?
2020. Okay. 2020. Really, really good player. Young kids. We got a lot of young kids, mainly Zach Clements out of San Antonio, 6'10 kid, 2021. Alex Chiku out of Paris, France. He's a 6'10 kid, 2021. And we've just we added a new kid from Senegal, 7 feet. He's actually 7'1". His name's Sidy Diallo. He's a freshman, 15 years old. Kid's gonna be very, very good one day. I mean, he's very raw right now and in the beginning stages of learning the game and learning the American culture. But he's picking up pretty quickly.
So how does finding players for friendly prep work? Like, what is that like for you?
Oh, it's pretty fun, actually. I mean, because you find players in all different types of ways. People call in, people send emails, you go watch games. I mean, there's really no, you know, other way. I mean, we find them any way we can, you know. So, I mean, I could be walking down the street and someone see, I got a Finley Prep hoodie on. They're like, hey, my nephew's 6'10", and all right, let me go watch him.
Is that the hook? He's 6'10"?
Yeah. Hey, anything 6'5 and up, we're gonna, you know, the antennas go up.
How much do you think your players are obsessed with recruiting rankings?
Oh, they all are in some way. They'll try and tell you they're not, but, I mean, they're kids. I mean, social media these days and just being, you know, out there and, you know, tweets and all those things. I mean, that's what they live for. So, I mean, they're pretty big on it, even though when they say they're not.
How often do you look at a recruiting ranking and think, wow, that's incredibly wrong?
I try not to look at him at all. People will call and say, hey, this kid is at this ranking, and I try and stay off of it. That's really only for the newspapers. You know, if you can play, you can play.
All right, so, like, I wish Bull Bull was at UNLV this year, so I was covering Bull Bull going off of UNLV. So I'm curious, what's the relationship like now? You're in your first year of Finley Prep. What's the relationship right now? Or is the head coach, I'd say. But
with Bull?
No, with UNLV now.
It's great.
And Marvin Mintz.
It's great. It's amazing. I just talked to Marv this morning. They're winning games, man. It's the name of the game. Win games. You know, that's what you got to do. So it's been great. Marv's a good guy. He looks after us pretty well, makes sure that, you know, we're doing things the right way over there, and we make sure that, you know, we try and, you know, do things well for him and try and bring in some guys we can put down there.
Were you at the game with Southern Utah, Todd Simon?
I was. That was a tough one, man. I love Todd to death, but, you know, hey, home team got the win.
And Dwayne Morgan over there with his shoulder trying to fall off, trying to get back in the game.
That was
my favorite part. He's going back and forth the locker room like four times, and every time coming back out trying to get back into the game.
That was unfortunate. I mean, you wanted him to play well just because, I mean, obviously being, you know, an ex-UNLV guy, you wanted him to play well, and then he goes down with a shoulder injury, and, I mean, man, it looked like it. Like you said, that thing was about to fall off. Yeah.
And he wanted to come back in. He was like, all right, I'll go out for like 2 minutes.
We'll you got to. You can't, hey, you can't just sit out. I mean,
yeah, just
because
you don't have a left
try.
Arm.
Yeah,
just keep playing. No big deal.
Hey,
inbound the ball. You only got one arm. Inbound the ball.
Yeah, yeah. Just go block shots. Hey.
So, story on you at NevadaPreps.com. And I got one question for you from this. I'm going to read this line from here.
All right.
He, referring to you, grew up playing basketball in Georgetown, Kentucky, and was in, quote, a bit of a situation that disallowed him from competing for his high school, hometown high school.
Uh-huh.
What does bit of a situation mean?
Man, so... We can go through the whole story if you got time. So when I was in middle school, I was a chubby kid. Like, I wasn't an athlete at all. And, you know, my mom had always told me, hey, you know, we were in an unfortunate situation. If you're going to go to college, you got to be smart. So I was a middle-of-the-road student in middle school, middle-of-the-road. And in eighth grade, you know, I passed, but my mom was like, it's not good enough. So she wanted to hold me back and make me redo eighth grade, and the public schooling system, you know, that wasn't their thing. They were just moving on. So my mom put me into a Catholic school. I redid eighth grade, went to a Catholic school. This Catholic school had never had a basketball team. In my eighth grade class, there were 9 kids. No basketball team. So they had just started a basketball team when I got there. Obviously, I'm the only one with any experience. So that eighth grade year I redid, like, I shot up to 6'2". Like, just out of nowhere. And, like, you know, all the baby fat fell off, and I started becoming athletic. And then at this school, I'm the only one that's shooting the basketball. Like, as soon as everybody gets it, they pass it right to me. So, you know, I learned how to become, like, a basketball player just because I got to do everything. I got to rebound. I got to initiate the offense. Like, I got to play deep. So I'm learning all this new stuff, and I'm, like, a brand-new athlete to this. So I actually became, you know, just really good athlete, and you know, I was meant to go to the Catholic school, Lexington Catholic, and a, you know, big time school in Lexington there, and you know, we couldn't afford it, so I had to go to my, you know, my normal school, the public school, Scott County High School. Wound up going there, and I wound up, you know, playing as a freshman, starting as a sophomore, and you know, the rest was history. And someone tried to call in and say that, hey, I was too old, you know, so that I had started ninth grade and went back, and it was this whole fiasco, and, you know, lawyers were brought in, and at some point I just...
Lawyers brought in?
Yeah, I got tired of it. You know, I was a kid. I just wanted to play ball, man. So, you know, I wound up here at Finley Prep, and that was history.
Yeah, there was the other theme of that story from the Nevada Preps on you was just the idea of your roster building. You're not necessarily interested in just finding the best five-star recruits every year to come play at Finley Prep.
No, definitely not. I mean, anybody would take those guys for sure. I mean, if I had an opportunity, I would look into it. But I'm here to build a team. You know, I'm here to build a program. You know, from the ground up again. And it's easy to just bring those guys in and let them do what they do, in high school, and it's just, you know, go play and hey, let's win some games and, you know, they'll be closer than they are. And I want the Mike Peck days. And I want to beat guys by 70. You know, I want to walk in the gym and you fear the name that you see. You know, not just, oh, they got this kid, but they only beat such and such by 5. Oh, we got a chance. No, I want you to fear us. So, you know, we're building a culture down there.
So a 30-point win's not good enough?
No, not good enough. Not good enough.
How many teams do you think you can beat by 70 this year?
Probably when we play ourselves in practice. That's about it right now. But we're doing well over there. We're trying. But I mean, that's the goal. But you know, at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, teaching these kids the right way, making sure they learn the game, and make sure when they go off, they're ready to play it wherever they go.
Next game is Friday, right?
Friday,
and that's here.
Yep, Friday at Henderson International School, 1165 Sandy Ridge Avenue, Henderson, Nevada.
What do you guys have nationally as far as tournaments coming up the next couple of months?
We're going to play here in the TARC. So the 19th, 20th, 21st, we'll play here in the TARC. After that, we'll go to South Dakota playing in the Hoop City Classic.
South Dakota?
Yeah. To play the 27th and the 28th and 29th. So we'll play De La Salle from Minnesota. We'll play Lalamere. This is a big one for us. And I think we'll play another local school up there on the last game. Then we'll play in the Cancer Research Classic in Wheeling, West Virginia. So we love that event. That's a great event. We'll have two games out there. McGurchin out of Georgia, Sharif Cooper, one of the, you know, best top point guards in the country. And then we'll play Sunrise Christian.
How many of your players have been to South Dakota before?
None. None. No players and one coach has been to South Dakota.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah.
So you'll get some culture in South Dakota. I don't know if that exists in South Dakota.
It's all flat land and snow.
But that's apparently where high school basketball is coming for at least a weekend.
Yeah, it's a pretty big event up there. It'll be fun, but it'll be cold and boring.
Well, he is Rodney Haddix, the head coach of the Finley Prep Pilots. Rodney, we appreciate you coming on.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Rodney.
Señores, una vez más, el disparo. ¡Gol! ¡Gol! Jake Bishop, señores. Cae la anotación de Vegas, ball de Knight. 4-2, Herbert Castro.
Buen gol.
Technically correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Thanks to Rodney Haddix, head coach of the Finley Prep Pilots, for joining us last segment. That was good.
That was great.
His bit of a situation was...
A bit of a situation.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. We didn't get to this yesterday because the Golden Knights scored 6 goals. Get it together, San Jose. Only give up five, and maybe we can play them all in one show. So we left out Alex Tuck's goal, called by Jesus Lopez on ESPN Deportes 1460. So we're going to play that now.
Allá adelante Alex Tuck, no puede. La presión de Max Pacioretty en la parte trasera de la portería. A venir disparo. ¡Gol!
I love Herbert Castro, the color analyst, going, ooh, right as Alex Tuck scores the goal. Like, ooh, that was nice. So, yeah, there's Alex Tuck. Should we have saved those and played them throughout the week?
I think the next time the Golden Knights score six goals at home, we'll do that.
Okay, so I have a couple of takes on the Golden Knights.
Yeah, my whole plan of your 10-step or 6-step method to fix the Golden Knights has sort of gone out the window now that
they fixed it.
Yeah, they sort of.
There was a 1-step, get Nate Schmidt back.
Legalize steroids.
Yeah, that too. So yeah, Schmidt doesn't have a point yet, but he's got a tremendous scoring chance for and against set up. He's got the best percentage for the Golden Knights so far. Granted, it's, what has he played, 4 games, 5 games since he's come back? One of the other things was Colin Miller. Got moved out of sort of that number one defenseman role, and he finally scored his first 2 goals of the season in the last 2 games. He's more of just, hey, you go score type of guy. Yeah, so that's worked for them. What I sincerely enjoy, though, about Nate Schmidt being back is this timeline. Golden Knights are an expansion team. Golden Knights are a really good expansion team. A lot of their players have career years. One of those players gets busted for steroids. He gets suspended for 20 games. During those 20 games, the Golden Knights are the second worst team in the NHL. He comes back. Oh my God, they're good again. I love that very much. It might just be a coincidence. But coincidence is a fun word. Like, I just sincerely enjoy that. Like, yeah, everybody on this team was better than they've ever been in the sport of hockey? What? Oh, one of them got busted for steroids.
It's a lot of guys, maybe last shot, because they were all unprotected dudes at the end of the roster. Yeah.
Okay, did you see how much Nate Schmidt was embraced in his first home game?
Yeah. Like, so we don't care.
All the fans had the signs with his head on it. Gary Lawless, Golden Knights insider, was on TV wearing a shirt that said Schmidt's back with his face on it. Like, the team went all in terms of, hey, this guy got suspended for 20 games for steroids. Ignore that. He's back, guys. Everybody be excited. I would guess most fan bases do something like that. Maybe not to that extreme, but like the whole idea of guy suspended for steroids, well, he's on my team, so I will embrace him, right? I've never covered a team where a guy's got busted for steroids, so I don't know how this normally happens. But at first I was like, that seems odd, but then I was like, yeah, maybe it's not so odd.
All I'll say is Ryan Braun this year. Ryan Braun and Bartolo Colon have been embraced by everyone everywhere, despite both, one being caught twice for steroids and had a secret family, and the other one calling the guy who did the drug test anti-Semitic and then going, well, I lied about that.
But that Bartolo Colon home run was so much fun.
Yes, but that's what I'm saying is pretty much I don't think anyone actually cares about steroids.
You shouldn't either. You should not care at all. They should all be legal. Who cares?
Especially in hockey and football, which is I hurt. I would really like to feel better,
like
faster.
To not hurt. I've got one other hockey take for you. Marc-Andre Fleury had back-to-back shutouts in back-to-back games. The Golden Knights are
Krispy
5.
Kreme was pissed.
Yeah. Golden Knights are 5-0-0 when Fleury records a shutout. They're 0-4-0 when Subban starts, and they're 7-8-1 when Fleury gives up a goal at all. So simplifying it, Subban plays worst team in the NHL. Fleury gets a shutout, best team in the NHL. Any other time, they're below 500, missing the playoffs. The thing I'm curious about is the rest, because Marc-Andre Fleury is on pace to play 69.8 games this year. Over the last 10 years, the goalies that win the Stanley Cup have almost always played less than 60 games in the regular season. There's only been one that's played as many as Fleury's on pace to play. Resting goalies, it's not like this huge analytic trend in hockey, but we're starting to get there where teams are like, oh, we need to not play our goalie 78 times. And the Golden Knights right now are playing, they're playing Fleury as much as anybody else in the league is. So I'm curious how this plays out. They might need to make the playoffs. But by the time they get to the playoffs, if he's played 70 games, is he going to wear out in the second round?
Yo, suck it,
Tyler!